This program was recorded at InterVarsity's Following Christ Conference, held in Chicago, December 27th through 31st, 2008.
My expertise is almost entirely in the public schools. And basically, what kind of questions do you have? Now, this handout talks about some scholarly and professional resources on a whole variety of different points of view. It includes the American Civil Liberties Union, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, which are two organizations that evangelicals usually don't feel too comfortable with. But on the other hand, we are in favor. I mean, are you in favor of separation of church and state or not? And most of us, considering the alternatives, and historically certainly, evangelicals have been among the loudest calling for separation of church and state if you go back far enough in history. So, if you're going to be a reflective educator, it's important to be able to express what the other people's opinions are. If you were a conservative, you should be able to defend the liberal position if you're truly reflective. If you're a liberal, you should be able to defend the conservative position. So, we live in a complex environment, and one of the neat things about education is that it's big enough to handle a wide variety of different approaches, so that there's no one right answer on very many of the issues that face Christians in education. The right answer will depend on you as an individual. It'll depend upon the circumstances at the time. So I don't know who wants to start us off, but...
Can I just add one thing to add to the resources there?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
One is, if you go to the Responsive Classroom, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's not a Christian organization, but it's from the Northeast Foundation for Children. But it has responsive classroom techniques, which are very compatible with Christian techniques to use in the classroom to develop a sense of community within the classroom to help empower children to keep things coming. So that's something that we train our teachers in at our school. And then there are things, of course, that we add to it. But I've found them to be very helpful. And they do training institutes all across the nation. And they have a website that you can go to. So.
Is it responsiveclassroom.com? Or
.org.
.org? Okay, great. And if others have additional resources that are of interest, please feel free to mention them. Thank you, Shannon. So what kind of things are you interested in raising questions about, and we'll try to respond.
I have a question. I'm not sure if I can communicate my question well. But I teach both in a middle school and a high school. My senior high school, actually, is in the afternoon. I've always, in everything that I've encountered in life, I've always felt completely comfortable with sharing in the right atmosphere my background, which is I was homeschooled through the 12th grade, and my faith. But for some reason, I don't feel comfortable in the senior high school, and I sharing either one of those about me, which I've never felt uncomfortable before. And I wonder, I guess my question is, do you guys know why I feel uncomfortable? And this is just my first semester teaching in the public schools. I've taught privately, taught one-on-one for several years. And I wonder if one of the reasons is I feel like I have failed my senior high school students to some degree, just in the teaching aspect. I should have been a better teacher. I knew better. I've had experiences that should have made me a better teacher than I've been this semester. And so I feel like since I've failed them in that, then they'll say, oh, she's a Christian, so she must think Christians should be like that, which I don't. So I guess my question is, why do I feel uncomfortable? If you guys know, if you felt this before and understand maybe why you felt uncomfortable sharing your faith or feeling like if you shared your faith, people would think, oh, Jesus is a weak person. Jesus doesn't have classroom management like he said. I don't know.
It seems to me that when you talk about it, you see it as, people will see it as a negative rather than a positive. It could be that there's someone, if you're open about your faith, who would be ready to jump and make a connection. Awesome. But your view right now is that if I share that, it will not shed a positive light on faith, my faith in Jesus, yeah, because of I'm not feeling very confident about how I am as a teacher. But our God is great. And I don't think you can diminish what God does with your life or how it's working in your life when you openly speak about Him. And I think there may be a blessing in you speaking about it that you're not receiving. If you're feeling compelled to say something, I think you need to listen to that challenge. I mean, what does that challenge really mean in your life? And to pray for them the opportunity. It sounds like it's something that's pressing on you and weighing. The other thing I would say about teaching is, I don't know of anybody who's had a first-year teaching experience where they have felt totally confident and I am the best thing that's ever happened to these kids and I know exactly what it's all about. If you did know that in your first year of teaching, I mean, there's a part of it where you realize it's so precious, right? Or it's a great calling and you want to do it so well. And so you're not going to achieve that in your first year. And you have to be kind to yourself. You know, there's a lot of growing that happens in those, and it's not just your first year. I have teachers who've moved from one grade level to another grade level, and they say it isn't until they get to the third year that they actually feel a comfort level with that grade level, even if they've been teaching for a long time. So there are tremendous things that you're learning. You're probably failing very well, learning from lots of mistakes, right? And I just would encourage you to be kind to yourself, you know, and to be open. If there's an opportunity and you're feeling a nudge to respond to that, to trust God.
There is such a thing as a natural teacher. Sometimes you'll see a situation in which somebody walks into the classroom as a student teacher and just shines, just does absolutely wonderful. But in those specific situations, it is, in my experiences, almost inevitably because for some reason or another, that person has fit that situation. Put that same person in another situation, and there are hundreds of different kinds of situations. Every school is different, every classroom, every level is different. They wouldn't shine. It wouldn't be that kind. So one of the things that it's important for anyone who is dealing with new teachers, whether it's a principal, an administrator, or whether it's a supervisor of student teachers, is to be thinking about the future. The vast majority of people, including myself, as you grow in teaching, you get better and better and better. That's why principals tend to hire experienced teachers. I mean, as a new teacher, if you're a new teacher, you probably hate that idea. Oh, these, why are they always? But I mean, that's true of practically every profession, but ask any principal and they're going to be saying the experienced teachers bring something. That's why experienced teachers get higher rates of pay. That's why schools try to hang on to their experienced teachers. Sometimes the idea of experienced teachers gets a bad rap because there are some who probably should have been phased out of the teaching profession. But by and large, the rule of thumb is, by my third year, I was a far, far, far better teacher than in my first year. And by my fifth year, I was better than in my third. And that's true of the great majority of people. So on the one hand, I'd agree with what Chan is saying. On the other hand, you have to realize that what you're experiencing is rational. That is, if you were in a position of weakness, shooting off your mouth is not something that a mentally healthy person is going to do. And when we are in positions of weakness, we need to, it is just, I think, mentally healthy to be stepping back and saying, maybe this isn't the point where I'm going to make broad, far-reaching pronouncements about my faith, other issues of importance. But then to balance that out, because there are no easy answers here, when are you going to speak up? I mean, I think of myself, I think of the peons without tenure over here. It is good to have tenure. Okay, and you know, be a full professor. I just am such hot stuff here. But you know, that's not how I feel. I walk into a conference like this, and there's, you know, a professor from Harvard Graduate School of Education or whatever who made it bigger than me. There's always, I was just at National Reading Conference where the great majority of people teach at colleges that are much more important than the college I teach at. The great majority of presenters are just more important than I am. So I'm basically a nothing walking into that conference. So do I, you know, when am I going to feel self-confident enough to stand up for what I believe in a reasonable way? It'll never happen if I wait until I feel totally secure. So, you know, there are all these different balances, but what you're thinking is not inappropriate. It sounds fairly mentally healthy to me.
Actually, I would jump in similar kind of balance there, where I would say, yeah, and if you're not feeling confident, it seems like there's a way in which it might not be it's kind of a learning process, so it might not be the right time, or you might not feel like that. On the other hand, I think I'd also balance that with the sense of, I think we have this image of we're going to be totally together, and that's when we're going to share the gospel. And I think we never feel totally together, and also I'm not sure that that's what people communicate, because I think there's always a sense of, I think when you feel confident, when you feel like everything's going your way, that isn't necessarily what other people want to hear from you. Like, I think there can be this attitude. So I think it is a balance of looking for the right moment, and maybe, you know, maybe looking for the right moment might be how you say it and who you say it to. I mean, maybe it isn't about broadcasting to the classroom, but maybe when someone is hurt or someone feels bad or something bad happens to someone or something like that, you know, finding the right context, and maybe it's a case of kind of finding the appropriate context and being open to that. Sorry.
I was just going to share a couple of examples. I went to public school growing up through high school, and my ninth grade science teacher, he was kind of a quirky teacher anyway, and he'd always show snippets of films, and that was normal for his class. So the day before winter break, he showed the Charlie Brown Christmas, and the section where Linus talks about the shepherds, and then just that part, and that was it. And then he let us have a Bible study in his room later, and he told us, this is what I do to share the gospel without trying to, you know, whatever. So that was his thing. And then there's another teacher that a friend of mine had, and for her, on the last day of school, it was kind of an optional day, I guess, for their school, and she would share her faith. And you know, the students knew they didn't have to be there, but everybody always came because they wanted to know, you know. Anyway, so those are just two examples of what some teachers have done.
I guess I'd just say, being a Christian teacher is not just sharing about Jesus so somebody can accept. It's like what we've been learning here. What does it mean for us to bear the image of Christ in situations where, as you were talking before, we care about these students as having dignity, and the things that she brought out. And when, as a teacher, I used to pray for my students by name and pray for opportunities that I would have, and when they come, and I just prayed by name for my students to continue. And I would just challenge you, whether you're in Christian school, public school, you can pray for the kids in your class, and God does amazing things.
A lot of teachers take their desks, by the desk, and just pray who's going to be sitting at that desk that day or that week, and just ask the Lord to open the doors, bless the team, the students, and or give them opportunities to communicate about what teachers.
I
just hang in there.
And one thing that you spoke, and then I made a connection with what part of Shannon's presentation, where she was talking about how the students forgive each other, and then the teachers model that forgiveness. Can't it be extended? Can it be enlarged to modeling a Christian way of living without mentioning, without preaching the gospel with words? What I'm thinking of is what St. Francis said: preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. So there are 100 ways of communicating the love of Christ without necessarily buttonholing someone in, which, you know, is not exactly my way of evangelism, but I know it works for some people.
I would say too that if there's a way that it works in your discipline, for example, my daughter is in a private school, but it's not Christian. And when they're studying history, the teacher is asked, is anybody in here a Christian? Anybody in here a Jew? Anybody, you know, so to encourage people to embrace their faith. But then he says, so this is, you know, for Jews, this is a certain thing. For Hindus, this is a certain thing. With music, you can do that. If you bring an Ave Maria in, you can talk about what that means. Or Bach. If you bring in his works, you build it in the context of that, in the context of the discipline. But then you also need to make sure you're bringing in the richness of other religions also, so that it's not, you know, that you're incorporating all the diversity. But you can probably speak more from your own faith aspect within the context.
I felt like I could perceive what you said a little differently. I was going to follow up with what you were talking about. And I'm relating it to my own personal experience, so don't let me map onto you what you said, and my perception is probably incorrect. But I was thinking, you know, when you said you were struggling a little in the classroom, and so in my words, I would put that in words of, you know, I screwed up here. And so one of the hard things for me to say to my students is, I screwed up. you know, that just didn't go like I planned. And, you know, even with experience, sometimes when I do something in one classroom, it works great. And then the next classroom, it just didn't, right? And sometimes that's, you know, out of my control, but sometimes I had a bad day, right? And I didn't react the right way that I should have. So I struggle with that because of pride. I don't want to admit I made a mistake. I also struggle with that because I don't want them to think maybe, you know, I'm soft and I'm weak and I lack control and I don't know what I'm doing. How can the teacher who's supposed to be leading admit that they made a mistake? And then I think also perception, right? Well, if they think I'm a Christian and I know I make mistakes, then they're like, well, Christians are obviously incompetent. So that's how I, you know, that's how I map onto what I heard you saying. I don't know, I talked to other people and they say, no, it's important to be honest with your students. And if you really felt like you screwed up, you need to tell them that, because they'll know. And if you don't admit it, then there's more distance between you and them. And if you do admit it and they're paying attention, then that's a chance for maybe a greater intimacy maybe to develop. So that's just how I kind of heard what you're saying.
I really connect to what you said. I connect that to as a Christian having a humble stance with colleagues. You know, so often in classrooms you shut the door, and you know that's your sphere.
Right.
And so often, like, the school culture is we share resources or ideas, but then when it comes to our classroom, it's just like, that's my domain. Either out of pride or defensiveness, or because we're afraid of what other teachers or principals might judge us for. And, you know, I think in my own journey, learning to be humble enough to say,
because I'm thinking, I'm Christian, like, they have to think I have it all together. But to come to a colleague, whether they're a believer or not, say, you know, I don't think I have this piece down, you know, can you help me on that? And I think it really, it builds relationships that lead to this the opportunities to share your faith in really authentic ways. And one of the things that I'm still doing as a teacher or a teacher of teachers, and it's still hard to do, is whenever I'm teaching kids, I'm actually videotaped. And as colleagues, we're trying to establish a culture where the classrooms are learning laboratories for teachers. We videotape ourselves to look at classroom management, pedagogy, content. That's hard. I mean, first of all, you look like 10 pounds overweight on television, but then you've got people watching. But if we, as Christians, but also, you know, with our colleagues, create an environment where we say, you know, we're not all perfect. We're all in this together. We're not here to compete. But that's hard to establish, you know, you have to find that. But I think it begins with individuals creating that culture where it's like, yeah, we're not competing, it doesn't matter who's the best teacher, who has the best school.
So. My answer may not be relevant, but like when I had a first year teaching experience, I taught like preschoolers, and like the whole wall was like, at the other side of the wall, we have like observation booths. So like parents and faculty supervisor and everybody could come, but I couldn't see them, you know, like, because it's a mirror, but the other side is the window. So like, oh gosh, I was like, I don't know, I feel like being observed is not very fun. And like working preschool, special educator teacher, I have to work with like families and a lot of siblings. So as an international student, I was not very, very comfortable working with like parents and siblings. Sometimes I do not understand what they're talking about, like the little kiddos, like pronunciation is kind of different, like, but then the more I'm uncomfortable with like this kind of environment, I was thinking like from God's perspective, God may not think it's important like how I feel comfortable about this environment, but my heart attitude like depend on Him more and more throughout this uncomfortable environment. So I always take that, this is a really good point. So I took that, and because I was like admitting that I really need to depend on Him, and just that was really like humbled me like automatically. So that opened up another channel to like communicate with the other professionals, like head teachers, and ask help, and they are willing to help me out. And they've been teaching like first year teaching experience. They totally understood me, and I thought they were like kind of make a negative comments on me, and I assume they have not very good image of me. But then they encouraged me a lot, and they just showed like strong interest in me, like growing as a teacher. So things happen like unexpectedly, I think. So I think you're on the right track.
Yeah, I have a question. I wonder, I'm in relation to those who are writing academically, and if you want to express something, you gain the idea from the Bible or a Christian idea, how do you express that in academic paper? For example, I was writing about the critical literacy education, and the experience of critical literacy education classroom, there's a lot of emotions going on. Usually, stigmatizing the stigmatizers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And especially for the graduate school students, where it's critical literacy is taught. President Bush is something to laugh at. Someone to laugh at and things like that, and because of their critical perspective, and I feel very uncomfortable about that, as a Christian, I mean, laughing at those with authority, and things like that. So I wanted to express in my paper that that's also that's kind of counter discrimination for the oppressors. But I think that I wanted to use the passage that we have to love our neighbors as ourselves. That's probably the exact expression that I wanted to use. But if I when I was talking to my professor, that if it's okay to use the Bible passage and things like that, and then he said, so then you have to mention that it's only for the Christian readers. I'm not sure my case is kind of unique case, but I just want to hear from other people.
I mean, I've written a little bit on critical literacy, so I'm just like, ooh, ooh. I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with that, but what I hear you, and just to clarify, what I hear you writing, which I think is really very clever, is this idea of reverse hegemony. So people who are criticizing something that they're thinking is oppressive, they themselves are being the oppressor in a new way. My only thought, and this is more, but more intellectual, is going back to Pompeii, and the greatest of these is love. And I remember being very timid at UCLA and presenting this in front of my colleagues. And, not a paper, but just the actual content. And that sounds like that's from the Bible. because it was that faith, hope, and love, right. And the greatest of these is love. And we're like, that sounds scriptural. and it's so interesting that so many people who worship pedagogy or critical literacy,
right.
They're so in love with it, not knowing that they are really in love with Spirit of God. I mean, that's really, that was, at least, I mean, my limited knowledge of critical literacy, that he, I mean, that Redding was, at least those tenets were scripturally based. I'm not sure about all of his philosophies, but at least that little piece.
Right.
Anyways, there we go. That was helpful at all.
Well, my senior associate is a fellow in the American Psychological Association. He's a Fulbright scholar. He has published a dozen books, over 100 articles, and he freely quotes the Bible in his scholarly papers. He'll just make, you know, he'll quote the Bible, and then I can give you his website, and you know you could take a look at some of his papers. I can send some to you if you'd like to find out more about that.
I think it's important to understand the audience that you're writing for too. If you were writing for personal reflective purposes, your own personal spiritual journey, there may be publications for that, but they're not going to be Reading Research Quarterly or Journal of Literacy Research or whatever. There are ways in which, if what you're doing is writing a paper, and the foundational understanding of the knowledge that you use, the epistemology is the Bible, that's not going to carry much weight. That's not going to carry any weight in academia. You don't, at least in my experience, you don't write that way. And when, okay, let me give you a concrete example. I write the column on technology and literacy education for the Reading Teacher, the International Reading Association Professional Journal. The last column had a story about a church effort to use Accelerated Reader, a software program for in a urban recreational center to link recreation with literacy development in a particularly poor area in Rochester. Something like that, I think, you know, we're aware of that. That's great. I'm not trying. I feel uncomfortable saying I want to spread the good news of Jesus, so I'm going to write this article that talks about a church-based, faith-based literacy effort. Would I feel that if I'm a Mormon and I'm going to write this article to promote Mormonism, or I'm a Jehovah's Witness, or I'm a Roman Catholic, or I'm this, that, or the other thing, and I'm going to write, I feel uncomfortable. I'm not sure I want that going into the reading teacher. But because I am an evangelical and I am aware of this literacy effort that's taking place in the city of Rochester, I can write about it as a natural outgrowth of my knowledge. It's what I know about, and it's important. It's good that people know about that. So I feel a little, you know, the basic rule of thumb that I follow, and, you know, again, it depends on where you're coming from, is if you wouldn't mind somebody from a religious group that you really don't like, okay, you're a Presbyterian and you don't like those Baptists, whatever, think about it and say, would you like the person saying and doing the things that you're about to do? And if not, then maybe your hesitation is justifiable. But on the other hand, you do come from a certain background, you do have a certain knowledge structure, and the knowledge that you have is important, and you should be willing to share that. Does that sort of make sense? Yes. I'm willing to have people disagree with me here. So.
I'm curious what Enright has done with his work. I mean, especially as part of what he did was informed by the Bible. I understand that not wholly and sort of the battle he went through with the department.
That's a good question. So he, all of his scholarly things, he emphasized the psychological principles, and he hasn't put anything, and forgiveness is a choice. He doesn't put anything specifically religious. He says you can be religious, but you don't need to be. So he is that's the route he's chosen.
So he doesn't talk about how this aligns with biblical teaching at all, right?
He doesn't really do that. And even in the Christianity Today article where he was interviewed, he shows how it's important. And one advantage is that forgiveness, there's some principles that are intrinsically kind of faith-related or spiritual, but he doesn't distinguish it. And interestingly, one progression that he's had that I think is part of this is as he wasn't a strong believer, then he became more active in an evangelical church, and then he'd grown up Catholic, and at some point he went back to the Catholic Church. So now he's more active in Catholic. So he's been active in the evangelical church, he's been active in the Catholic Church, and I think there's always opportunity. There's always times when him being on both sides, people kind of want him to fight that battle that he doesn't want to fight. Partially he does it because he doesn't want to fight battles between evangelicals and Catholics. He wants, does that make sense? So I think he's kind of felt like there's... So he's less mentioned it specifically, but then felt like people can... That he's kind of empowering people to choose that. And again, most of his students are Christians, and so I think that's kind of the way he's gone about it.
I'm wondering if there's a way in which you can write your paper where you address the value that you want. But it does not necessarily have to state it biblically. For example, if the value, you know, if our understanding is that everyone is created in the image of God, so therefore everyone infinitely has worth and value. That's what you want. That's what you want protected. So is there a way for critical literacy to happen that protects the worth and dignity of each person? That's part of the healing that needs to be brought into this world. That's very Christian, but you're not putting, quote, a Christian label on it, right? That's something that will speak to a much greater audience. It's like this forgiveness thing.
Well,
it will speak to a greater audience, but if you put the Christian label on it right away, it doesn't have as far as you.
Well, with what you're saying about the idea of people creating the image of God, what did Bob do? He grabbed Gordon Hears a Who, with Horton saying a person is a person no matter how small. Now, how different is a person is a person no matter how small versus you're infinitely valuable in God's image? I mean, I think it's really the same principle,
but don't you believe that you can use both of those terms in that same issue, critically speaking, and show how when you're looking at all kinds of ideas that it comes from that kind of concept, not only comes from what we would value as a secular perspective, but Jesus himself using the fact that he's pointing to the value of a person reaching out and dealing with this issue of Samaritan, because that's really where it comes from, reaching back. And so he was just explaining how you love one another in this dialogue. Bringing in a couple of examples like that, one it could be biblical,
because he does have examples. I think it could be good. Maybe have two or three examples.
Yeah.
And one thing that's a tricky balance, and I think it's a dance, because I think on the other hand, sometimes I think people say, so someone who I think who's a truly secular person, someone says, person's a person no matter how small. At some level, I agree with that. At another level, sometimes I feel like, but how do you know that, or why? You know, where do you get that belief from? And so it is kind of this balance. I think there's a way in which God does make sense of things, and so it's a tricky balance. But so I like that idea, maybe giving a couple different examples. So it is a bit of a dance, I think, kind of.
Like Rabbi Hillel, for example, my senior associate is Jewish. He's a secular Jew, but he has a great love for Scripture. And he brings up biblical things all the time in his discussion of psychology. And he brings up Rabbi Hillel. He brings up Mishnah. He brings up the Tanakh. He's constantly bringing up these very Jewish subjects, yet he himself is very secular. And he has seen the value in the biblical background to his psychological work, as opposed to a purely secular, purely deterministic traditional psychology and psychotherapy. So that's where he's coming from. And so he unashamedly uses mostly the Old Testament, the Tanakh, in his scholarly papers, but they're published. You know? But then he also quotes Freud and Kolbe.
Right.
You know,
he's
got
to be within a circle of scholars.
Exactly.
Exactly. I will say that there was a scholar paper that, or thing that Enright did, where he did talk about the history of forgiveness, and he talked about, you know, so he talked about it in the Old Testament, he talked about it with Hindus, he talked about it with Muslims, he talked about it with Christians. I would say the Christian part was more developed, but within the context it fit.
To answer your question, I think you can, depending on how you
frame it.
That's right.
It sounds like kind of a fun theological journey for yourself. I mean, like, does the oppressed deserve to be oppressed? Does the oppressed deserve to oppress others because they've been oppressed?
We are running out of time. I just would like to close with one more suggestion, and that is to work through your church. That is, in InterVarsity, we often talk about being in the academy and witnessing in the academy, and in the public schools, we think about ways of working for Jesus in the schools, but the church is really the institution that can be a centerpiece in your life for reaching out to your community. My own experience is... my own experiences would suggest that get involved in a church that's local to the school you're teaching in. You know, people will very quickly come to know what you're doing as you volunteer to be a Sunday school teacher, as you volunteer to be a youth group leader in church leadership, and many churches, especially smaller churches, need professionals to get involved because they just don't have people who know the kind of things that teachers know, planning, setting goals and objectives, step-by-step movement toward those goals and objectives. A lot of churches can use that kind of leadership. So if it will quickly get around in your school if you're active in the local, in a local church. That might be an important thing to keep in mind. Well, thank you very much for coming. As I mentioned, tomorrow night what we'll be doing is maybe we'll have time for talking with about practical issues as well. But I'd like to, especially if things are coming up in the presentations from the plenary speakers that would be of interest in education, we can kind of think about that and respond to that. And we'll probably have a circle discussion environment at that point, too. How about if I close in prayer?